I take public comment first, so you gotta realize. Okay.
If you'd like to make a public comment on the consent agenda and you're on your phone, please dial *9. And if you're on your computer, please raise your hand. All right, Keith, you just have to unmute yourself.
Hi, everyone. This is Keith Weimer, and I just wanted a change of the spelling of my name. It's all I have a concern about with the agenda. It's W-I-M-E-R as in man.
Perfect. Is that your comment, Keith?
That's it.
Thank you so much. There's no other public comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. Before we have a motion, I just had one minor comment or correction on the minutes. On number 9, the adjournment, it says the next regularly scheduled meeting is on June 16th. I don't know where that came from because I don't think that's something we discussed. So I don't know if we just want to delete that item. Because obviously the next meeting is today, not June.
You are correct, Marshall. We can make that adjustment.
Okay. All right, Charlie, you want to make a motion?
We will definitely address Keith's comment as well.
Okay. You want to make the motion that to approve with those two comments being incorporated in?
Yes, S&T makes a motion that all the consent agenda is approved with those changes.
Okay, Mark? Thank you. We have a second, please.
Mark will second that.
Mark seconds, okay. Let's go ahead and have a roll call vote, Daniel, please.
Director Cody?
Approve.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Zimmer?
Yes.
Chairperson Ohilski?
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. So next item on the agenda is public comment for items not appearing on the agenda. So if anybody has a public comment on items that are not on the agenda, and secondly, within our subject matter jurisdiction, please, excuse me, raise your hand, Laura.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, *9. And if you're on your computer, please raise your hand. All right, Jeff, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you, Marshall. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I'd like to talk about a couple things. First of all, as most of you may know, S&T Mutual has retained Cleith Harris Group to do an analysis. An analysis of nitrates. And as I understand it, S&T is attempting, if they can demonstrate the source of that constituent, which is going to be a challenge unto itself, if they can demonstrate a source, for example, Cabrillo Estates is what they've suggested in the past, that they're going to attempt to leverage the water board to compel Cabrillo Estates to put in a sanitary sewer system, put in the collection system. I find this just to be preposterous on a number of levels. First of all, there's this, with the Cleith Harris Group, there's this somewhat tenuous, but still a connection with the BMC. And I think that's a clear conflict of interest. The appearances are terrible. Your consultant is doing work for one of your members. And it's not a good path. It's not a good look for this committee. And frankly, S&T should have gone out and found somebody else. Now I'd like to turn my other good charm to the sustainability group. And you will note in your packet, I believe, there is your staff prepared responses to their very long and verbose letter regarding the basin management and its various aspects. And my first objection is that your staff would take the time to address their concerns the majority of which are completely baseless. And I don't have time now to go into it, but I object to the amount of time your staff has taken, and I object to the attention that the sustainability group is receiving, given that there's simply a handful, literally a handful, of folks that they're all about failure, not success, when it comes to managing the groundwater basin. So those aren't the kind of partners or folks I'm really interested in hearing from, because they're, again, their goal is failure, not success. Thank you.
There's no other public comment at this time. Oh, right. I'm so sorry. There is one. Lindy, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It's Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I guess I sort of wanted to tag on to a couple of things that Jeff Edwards said. One, if it's such a situation that we are getting too many nitrates coming out of Cabrillo Estates and too many nitrates coming from fertilizers put on the golf course and possibly too many nitrates coming from the horse farms up above, the highest nitrate producer that we know, I believe it's important to find out and have them contribute to the cost of treating this water. That's the whole situation the rest of us are in. So there's always been high nitrates out in that area, and I encourage S&T to do whatever studies to find out where they're coming from as best they can. So ignorance is bliss for some people, but I would like to know. And I just want to support the sustainability group. I've worked with them for probably 10 years, 12 years. I've just watched the progress and the concern and intelligence that they have addressing issues in the basin as far as pollutants and quantity. And so anyway, and last but least, I'm really hoping that we can put some meters on the private wells, because you really can't balance a basin unless you know what half of the basin is using. And I support the county looking into getting some way of putting meters on them, and maybe paying for it out of the basin management's funds partially, but it definitely needs to be done as soon as possible, because we do have a very differing set of concerns about whether this basin can sustain any future growth or even the existing. So anyway, those are my comments. Thank you.
There's no other public comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me, I'll bring it back to the committee. The one thing that I would, in response to Jeff's comments, does legal counsel have any comments as far as whether there would be a conflict of interest there with Spencer Harris working for Sunset Terrace? You guys, you don't need, Erica or whoever, you don't need to respond right now, but I think that was a question that does need to be addressed.
Yeah, Marshall, how about maybe we can address that at the staff level bring a response back.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure there was not a conflict there. Okay, yep. With that then, we'll move on to the executive director's report. Dan, so it's item number 7.
Item number 7, executive director's report. Sorry, let me get back to where I need to be here. It's a rather lengthy executive director's report. Well, when we incorporate all the attachments, but bear with me as we work through it. So just moving through the executive director's report, no real updates to the funding section. Those opportunities are, as I know, it's still as described. There is a bit of an update on the status of the BMC initiatives. First, with the formalizing and updating the sustainable yield estimates. This is an initiative that the BMC staff will be working on throughout the remainder of this year. I envision that this will be what we will strive to make this a transparent process, beginning with a bit of education in terms of outlining how the sustainable yield estimates are developed, what are the assumptions and components that go into the calculation of sustainable yield, and then going through the process of updating the sustainable yield based on current information with respect to recycled water availability, the anticipated location of the second program seawell, and any other, and as well as updated production information from the purveyors. So more to come on that. I anticipate that we'll be digging into the updated sustainable yield estimates later this summer and into the fall. Regarding the lower aquifer transducer installation, in March, Cleith Harris geologists initiated a request for permission to access and install transducers in several county private and purveyor wells. So those requests have been released and obtaining access is ongoing. The basin metric evaluation, similar to the updated sustainable yield estimate, this is an initiative that BMC staff will be working on this summer and will be bringing back to the BMC in terms of a draft TM sometime likely in the fall. Again, with this initiative, my vision is to have this be an open and transparent process where we evaluate the existing metrics and we look for opportunities to improve, if possible, those metrics through incorporation of additional data from either the new monitoring well or other wells so that we can have metrics that we can rely upon to provide us with a assessment of the health of the basin. And then the last initiative is the recycled water beneficial use evaluation. Also, that the efforts there will begin this summer and carry on into the fall. And just as a reminder for the group, this is really an opportunity to document all the constraints and the opportunities for the recycled water program and the water that it produces, with the goal of identifying the highest and best use for that water and making the necessary changes, modifications to put that water to the most beneficial use for the community. Moving to implementation and funding plans, just the update there is that the funding and organizational subcommittee continues to evaluate the different funding options available for spreading basin management costs amongst all basin users and or associating costs for any infrastructure projects to support growth to new development. And we anticipate that we'll be coming back to the BMC at some point in the future meeting with a summary of the sort of the findings and recommendations for next steps with respect to funding and organizational options. Those next steps could include releasing an RFP to solicit outside specialized consultant support to further investigate some of the different funding options. And that is a budgeted item in the calendar year 2021 BMC budget. Moving down to land use and planning process update, I received an update from county planning with respect to the Title 19 water offset requirement and the retrofit to build program. And as stated, the county department of planning building is in the process of hiring a consultant to update the retrofit to build program for Los Osos. That update would include an update to the water savings calculation assumptions, identifying potential initiatives to expand the program, creating a framework to administer new initiatives with an ongoing monitoring and reporting component, and incorporating an estimate of anticipated administrative staffing costs, including an updated estimate of the water savings potential remaining within the Los Osos community. And then finally, with developing recommendations to potential amendments or modifications to the Title 19 ordinance. Moving down to the community plan, my understanding is there hasn't been a hearing date set with the Coastal Commission, but the Coastal Commission has provided letters to the county requesting additional information. One of those pieces of information was coordination with the purveyors, and my understanding is those efforts are ongoing. Similarly, with the ADU ordinance, the Coastal Commission has requested additional information from the county, including some coordination with the purveyors, and the purveyors in the county are preparing those responses as well. The Los Osos Wastewater Project Flow and Connection update. We have the latest data from the wastewater and recycled water flows through March of 2021. We are working with county staff to come up with a more streamlined methodology to obtain this data. And so, I'm optimistic that we'll be able to provide this data to the BMC in a timely manner at future meetings, as we did this year, thanks to county staff for helping us pull all this together. There is an enforcement update. As of May 12th, 99.4% of the connections have been connected to the sewer system. There are a total of 36 properties not currently connected, each in a different phase of enforcement. And then moving down to the cannabis and hemp update, the update there is that the Wild Foes Farms coastal development plan application has been appealed to the Board of Supervisors, and at this point, a hearing date has not yet been scheduled. Included as an attachment to the Executive Director's report is an updated Wild Coast Farms water management plan that we've provided for BMC consideration, and we will be coordinating with county planning staff on next steps with respect to that water management plan. Additionally, included as attachments to the executive director's report is the Los Osos Sustainability Group's March 16th comment letter, as well as a BMC staff response. And there's, as was mentioned earlier, there's quite a bit in the letter and in the response, too much to get into every component of it, but I think it's worth kind of hitting some of the high points in the staff response. I think just initially at a high level, you know, there were a number of comments and requests included in the sustainability group's letter. I am happy to report that, you know, through the collective and collaborative efforts of the BMC, there are a number of initiatives underway in calendar year 2021 that will help better inform the BMC and potentially address some of the concerns raised within the sustainability group's letter. And you know, we mentioned those previously, but those primary efforts are the updated estimates of sustainable yield, the evaluation of the basin metrics, the funding and organizational study, recycled water beneficial use evaluation, and the Broderson transducer installations. More specifically, just hitting a couple of the comments. Looking at comment 5, improved lower aquifer monitoring. As part of the staff's response, I wanted to highlight that BMC staff has recently reinitiated conversations with the Cal Poly professor on the potential to partner on a geophysics project. this geophysics project presents an exciting opportunity to collect additional data on the location and extent of the seawater intrusion front that I can be anticipated to be informative with respect to the threat of seawater intrusion, and also a tool that we can use through subsequent data collections to track the movement of that seawater intrusion front underneath portions of the community. So I will be bringing additional information back to the BMC on this opportunity at future meetings. I think most of the other responses I'm going to highlight really just sort of point to the ongoing, the BMC initiatives in calendar year 21. So we can probably don't need to revisit those. Item 8 in the letter was an additional stopping the Title 19 program. As discussed, BMC staff as well as the purveyors are in conversation with the county with respect to an evaluation of the Title 19 program. So that is underway. A number of the other items, unfortunately, aren't in the calendar year 2021 budget for the BMC, but were included in the implementation plan evaluation exercise that the BMC went through in 2020. And I would hope and anticipate that, as we go through subsequent budget evaluation processes, that there potentially are opportunities to reconsider and add to future BMC task lists some of these additional initiatives that were included in the implementation plan that were just not able to be included in the calendar year 2021 a work plan because of limited staff and budget availability. And then finally, as part of the executive director's report, I additionally included a letter that the Basin Management Committee received from the Land Use Committee of the Los Osos Community Advisory Council. Just summarizing at a very high level is that the Land Use Committee expressed concerns about Los Osos water supply and sustainability and wanted to provide that comment to the BMC. And so that wraps up the executive director's report, unless there's any specific areas that the directors would like me to go into more detail on.
Excuse me. Thank you, Daniel. Does anybody have any more or any questions from the committee members before we go to public comment and then come back?
This is Charlie. On the status of BMC initiatives, I like to be very careful about how the BMC staff approaches these things. And I think it's pretty obvious, but I think we should say it out loud that proposals for changes should be made directly to this committee, and changes should only be made after unanimous approval by BMC directors on that subject. Land use planning process update. I think it's interesting that the county would like to make decisions for the Basin Management Committee, it seems, with regard to Title 19 water offsets as they apply specifically to the Los Osos Basin. And I would like to see the Basin Management Committee much more involved in that process, that decision-making process, and the design of those offsets. And let's just end my comments there, and I'll give somebody else a chance.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me. Okay, well, why don't we go to public comment then, and then we can have a discussion afterwards.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, please dial *9. And if you're on your computer, please raise your hand. All right, Jeff, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. Good afternoon again. My name is Jeff Edwards. And first of all, I'd like to talk about the status of basin plan implementation and funding plans. And there's several things going on here. There's the payment of the administrative cost to run the BMC. There are program implementation costs. And then there is the formula to assess new development relative to water resource projects. I favor the latter. We need to be able to get new development to pay its way. What I don't favor is the idea of creating a JPA just simply to simplify the accounting. The whole idea of a JPA is likely unnecessary because the purveyors, as you know, are funding their own basin plan projects. The CSD is funding its well, Golden State's funding its projects. So the plan implementation is being handled by the purveyors. The administrative costs should just remain as it is. There's nothing broken about that. My second point is the Title 19 update. I'm pleased to see this. It's been overdue. I'm concerned about how long it's going to take to get this going. I suggest that really you start with number 5, which is the estimate of water savings potential remaining in Los Osos. I think through a fairly reasonable statistical analysis, we can figure out right out of the get-go how much water there is to conserve. And then I think the rest of the pieces should fall in after that. I'd like to talk about Sea Pines and Broderson. Based on the latest daily discharges to the leach fields and recycled water deliveries, the lion's share of the water finally is going to Broderson. This is what we want. We need to keep that up. We need to determine whether Broderson is going to work or not. The next thing I'd like to chat about is Wild Coast Farms. They have a new report out, water management plan, revised date, May 5th. Please read it. To date, neither the county, your committee, LOCAC, nobody has completed a critical analysis of this water management plan, and that needs to happen before the board hears it. Planning staff is not likely to be helpful either. Lastly, and this is a question for the supervisor, the county has recently established a position in the administrative office for a groundwater basin management, I'll call him a czar. I wish to confirm that only Sigma basins are going to be governed by this new czar. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Patrick, I have an email from you saying you were planning on doing public comment on this item. I don't see your hand raised. Are you still planning on doing public comment? All right, there's no other public comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. So we'll bring it back to the committee, pardon me, for any more discussion on these particular, the report, the executive director's report.
I'll go ahead and make a comment.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Mark.
So just starting with Charlie's comment about the changes to the BMC initiatives, I think we should use caution in those changes. We have a plan in place, and if we're going to change, we need to understand why we're changing and that it's a warranted change. And so how that's framed, we'll have to talk about that as far as a unanimous vote or if some of this can be done at the staff level, but definitely need to use some caution in that. If we're going to change what we're reporting. Regarding the Title 19, yes, happy to hear about this update. I also had a concern about timing. And one of the reasons is, we have so many simultaneous workings taking place that, one of the things, we have the community plan before us, but even before that, we have the ADU and the purveyor's response really, you know, ties into the Title 19 and the offset program. And so, you know, we're tentatively scheduled to have our response back by July. And I don't think that, you know, the Title 19 will be updated by then. So it's going to be difficult with so many things, you know, taking place at the same time to really provide a good feedback back to the Coastal Commission. So we'll be watching closely on how that works, you know, as far as the Title 19, our metrics update, and then in addition to our response back to the Coastal Commission. I think all those are everything is tied together and it's all working simultaneously. And we just need to make sure that it's all on track together. You know, one of my comments regarding the conservation update that ties into the Title 19 is the 2-to-1 offset and you know, how that's hardening our conservation. Really, that conservation that we impose on our existing users is intended for us to manage the basin. So want to be careful in using that conservation as offset programs and, you know, how that hardens our ability to use conservation for managing the basin. Also, so sustainability letter, appreciate everyone's time. They definitely put in a lot of effort in consolidating a lot of information that I thought was good and warranted some review. Not quite sure what the correct response on this is at this point, but definitely took note on some of that working and still working through digesting the letter itself and the content, because there's a lot there. And that does it for my comments.
Oops, excuse me, thank you. I had mute on, I didn't realize that. Anybody else have comments on this item?
This is Charlie again. I'd like to make one more comment regarding the Wild Coast Farms proposal. I'd really like to see the Basin Management Committee make a formal recommendation to the county that this proposal should only be approved if metering equipment is placed on all the source wells and production data reported to the BMC. And I don't think the BMC should be timid about this. I know we don't have legislative powers or land use authority powers, but we are trying to manage a water basin, and I'd like to see us take that initiative. Thanks.
Thank you. I don't think that's something we could do today because we haven't agendized it, but Erica, is that something we could do or not?
Mr. Chairman, maybe I just weighed in here. That's a standard condition on cannabis projects, that their the amount of their groundwater use be monitored, and that their conservation, if they need to do conservation to offset that, as they would in the Los Osos Basin, that be documented.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Charlie?
Yes, I'd still like to agendize that for a future meeting. It looks like we're gonna be meeting again in June.
Yes, we are going to be meeting again in June, yes.
And I'd like to go ahead and agendize that and make that a formal request from the BMC that should be done, just to formalize that.
Okay, well, we'll add that as an agenda item then for our June meeting.
Yeah, if I could jump in to respond to that. So yeah, one of the Planning Commission's provisions for approval of the Wild Coast Farms project was a requirement or a condition that the BMC review and comment on the proposed water conservation plan before the Department of Planning and Building approval of the project. So that mechanism for BMC review has been built into this specific project. I'm not quite certain how that it plays out now that the project has been appealed to the Board of Supervisors. So, but that, you know, potentially it could bring another opportunity for BMC and comment review before it gets additionally reviewed. I am working with county planning and building to more formalize a process where projects, or, you know, maybe not necessarily specifically projects, but where different water offset programs that are being proposed for the basin would be brought to the BMC's attention in a timely manner and allow for review and comment should the BMC want to take that opportunity.
Okay.
And right. Well, I guess, and then one other thing, I would like to respond to Charlie's earlier comments and that echoed by Director Zimmer. You know, it, with respect to changes to the basin plan through the BMC initiatives, it is clear and required by the stipulated judgment. It's my understanding that yes, any modifications that would be made would require BMC review and potentially unanimous approval and legal counsel. I can work with legal counsel to confirm that. But yes, I envision this being an open and transparent process that involves the BMC, involves the public, so that we can all, one, improve our understanding of how these metrics work and what they're telling us, and what potential, if possible, if there are opportunities to improve the metrics or the sustainable yield estimates, and that those initiatives will be coming back to the BMC, not just necessarily for final approval, but at multiple points along the way during that process.
Okay, thank you. So with that, then we'll move on to item number 8, the action items. We have one item, A, presentation of the draft 2020 annual report. The recommendation is to receive a presentation from BMC staff regarding the draft 2020 annual report and confirm the June date for the BMC meeting to approve the final 2020 annual report for submission to the court. So I'll turn it back over to Daniel.
Thank you, Chair Ohilski. I'm going to take over screen sharing here.
Well, you got a big picture, you up on the screen now.
Yeah, that's not what I was intending to share, but
so there you go.
Can everybody see the presentation?
Yes. Item 8A, presentation of the draft 2020 annual report. I can see it.
Great. Yes. So yeah, my intention here is to provide an overview of the information contained in the draft 2020 annual report and be available along with Spencer Harris, with Cleith Harris geologist, to answer any questions with respect to the report. I would also note we've received comments on the report that I unfortunately haven't had an opportunity to review in detail, but that I will be working with Spencer and other staff to review the comments that we've got on the report and incorporating any necessary changes before we develop the final annual report for the BMC's consideration in June. So rainfall, the Los Osos Basin is in some ways wholly reliant on local rainfall for water supply, and so rainfall is an important parameter when we're evaluating how the year went. Unfortunately, in 2020, the rainfall at the Los Osos landfill gauge was below average for that location with 13.88 inches. The average rainfall at that location is 16.09 inches. Included in the annual report is a historical graph of rainfall from the Morro Bay Fire Department. This graph is incorporated in the report because it has a longer period of record going back to the 1960s. ironically, our the average rainfall at that rain gauge is also just a little over 16 inches, so a similar amount. But as you can see from this graph, the 2020 water year was below average, and we have been in a an extended period of drought, stretching back to 2011. With one above average year at this rainfall gauge in I believe water year 2017. Production, another key parameter for the basin. I've included two tables here summarizing production within the Los Osos Basin. For the first table in the upper left shows 2019 production in comparison with 2020 production. Production increased in the Los Osos Basin. It's estimated to be around 110 acre feet in 2020. A portion of that was associated with increased purveyor pumping of approximately 70 acre feet, but also anticipated or estimated increase in community facility and agricultural pumping as well. The table on the bottom right allows us to compare 2020 production not only to 2019, but going back to 2013. And so important to note that while there was an increase in production in 2020 with respect to 2019, the overall trend in production is still downward looking back towards 2013 with estimated basin production being approximately 500 or more acre feet lower in 2020 than it was in 2013, which speaks to the, largely to the conservation efforts of the community. This slide shows a summary of the basin metrics that the BMC uses to track the health of the basin. And I'll walk through these. So the basin yield metric, this is a metric that compares basin production to the estimated sustainable yield. The basin yield metric for 2020 was 73. The goal of the basin yield metric is to be 80 or less. So while being below the goal, that is good. Unfortunately, it's higher than the 2019 value. And thus, it's characterized as a year-over-year deterioration of that metric. The water level metric is unchanged from 2019 at 1.8 feet above mean sea level. So no change in that metric over this last year, but still below the 8-foot target for that metric. In the basin plan. The chloride metric did increase from 163 milligrams per liter in 2019 to 205 milligrams per liter. This represents a deterioration with respect to the previous year's metric, as the concentration of chlorides in the chloride metric wells did increase. And then the last metric is the nitrate metric. The nitrate metric decreased from the 2019 value from 22 milligrams per liter to 20 milligrams per liter. And this represents an improvement in that metric, as nitrate concentrations are in the wells that were monitored decreased on average. The next slide shows a graph of the chloride and water level metrics to help put the trends, or to help illustrate the trends that we're seeing in those metrics. The blue line represents the water level metric. And as mentioned before, there was no change between 2020 and 2019, and has been somewhat stable going back to 2018. Previous to that, we were seeing a steady increase in the water level metric, which is important. The water level metric is an indicator of the pressure or the water levels within the lower portion of the aquifer that is necessary to keep seawater intrusion at bay. The chloride metric is shown in red. We saw an increase in the chloride concentrations within the chloride metrics in 2020 relative to 2019. Unfortunately, that's consistent with the trend we've seen over the last three measurements, but still lower than the maximum chloride concentrations that were observed in the metric back in, I'm going to say, 2016, with the peak around 230 or so milligrams per liter. The nitrate metric is shown here. The nitrate metric is a measure of the five-year running average of the nitrate concentrations within the metric wells. And as mentioned earlier, there was an improvement in the nitrate metric. This is the first year that we saw a lower nitrogen metric concentration than the previous year within the nitrate metric. That as represented by the green line and the green circles here. We have, it should be noted, we've been seeing individual year nitrate concentrations decrease going back to 2018, but because it's evaluated on a five-year average, it took a couple of years for those lower concentrations to bring the overall average down within the nitrate metric, but a promising sign that nitrate concentrations are decreasing within the aquifer. Additionally, included in the draft annual report are estimates of seawater intrusion into the lower aquifer, represented or consisting of zones D and E. And we have a plot here that shows the estimated location of the 250 milligram per liter chloride front within those zones. We'll walk through these sequentially. Each of these lines represents either a different zone or a different point in time. And so starting with zone D in 2005, this aquamarine line represented the location of the seawater intrusion front. Unfortunately, as time passed between 2005 and 2016, we saw an advancement of that 250 milligrams per liter chloride line inland towards the community center, not quite getting there, but heading in that direction. In 2019, we saw a retreat of that seawater intrusion front, I think associated with, you know, reduced production, as we mentioned earlier, also some improved hydrologic conditions in 2017 and 2019. I think another component of this retreat was the installation of the Cuesta by the Sea well and us obtaining additional data for the concentrations of the water within zone D and E in this portion of the aquifer, which we previously did not have available. In 2020, we unfortunately did see an advancement of the freshwater seawater intrusion relative to 2019. It's characterized as a localized movement of the 250 milligram per liter chlorine isopleth, so not necessarily universal or fully across the basin, but a bit localized in the area of LA-10. And then the final line, that additional line that's shown on here, is the zone E 250 milligrams per liter isopleth. This is shown much further inland. That's attributed, it's a lower layer within the aquifer, and it is known that the seawater intrusion into zone E is further within, has intruded further within the community than in zone D, primarily due to the increased density of seawater and the additional pressure behind it. The next slide shows the upper aquifer water level profile. So this is an additional, not quite a metric, but a profile that's utilized to track and help ensure that there's sufficient water level or pressure within the upper aquifer to prevent seawater intrusion into the upper aquifer. As the basin plan programs look to shift pumping from the lower aquifer to the upper aquifer, there was a concern that about the potential for seawater intrusion in the upper aquifer. And so my understanding is the water level profile was developed to be able to track that. And so happy to report that the upper aquifer water level profile at all locations was above the protective elevation shown in red, profile shown in blue, to sufficiently protect the upper aquifer from seawater intrusion. And then additionally included in the annual report is an updated status of basin infrastructure projects. The one of the sort of two projects I wanted to highlight, one in program A is the LOCSD's 8th Street Upper Aquifer well. This is project that's been ongoing for a while. The well was actually drilled and cased in December 2016. However, in waiting for grant funding, this project hasn't been fully completed. However, that grant funding has been awarded. Design is 100% complete, and construction is anticipated to move forward this summer and allow for the full completion of this project. And the other project I wanted to highlight is in program C. As has been reported to the BMC over this last year, the Los Osos Community Services District has been making progress on identifying site selection and doing environmental work for the construction of the expansion well number 2 for program C. And the submittal of the minor use permit will be completed in May, and construction is anticipated to begin in Q1 2022. Some of the recommendations that are included in the annual report, and actually some of these are from previous annual reports, but one was to retain a licensed surveyor and perform wellhead surveys. This was completed in 2020. The surveyor wasn't able to collect survey elevations for all the wells, but 20 wells were surveyed as part of that effort and will benefit the Los Osos Basin Monitoring Program with improved elevation data for many of the monitoring wells. Analyzing first water well number 6 for CECs, this was completed in 2020. Installing transducers to track development of the Broderson Mound, that is currently ongoing, wasn't completed in 2020, but was funded for completion in calendar year 2021. And then also reevaluation of the water level metric to incorporate the wellhead survey data. That is an initiative that was described to be occurring in 2021 as well. Additional recommendations in the annual report include developing a rating curve for the Los Osos stream gauge. There's currently not an accurate rating curve that allows the translation of water level to flow, which was an important piece of information for understanding flow in the creek and potential recharge for the basin. Another recommendation is to evaluate the feasibility and cost of modifying existing wells to improve the Zone E monitoring network. And so this will be something that BMC staff will be discussing and potentially bringing back to the BMC for consideration. And then finally was the preparing an updated sustainable yield estimate to account for the now determined location of the second program C expansion well, as well as revised recycled water availability estimates. And then, as mentioned before, this is an issue the BMC is taking on and one that is actually required by the stipulated judgment. And just some other sort of key 2021 initiatives, then we've really covered these already. So I don't know that we need to highlight any of them other than, I guess, the implementation and initiative evaluation. One of the things the BMC did in approving the calendar year 2021 budget was include a line item to potentially evaluate different infrastructure programs or implementation initiatives to improve the sustainability of the basin. And so did we get to the point where we're ready to start looking at those different opportunities? There is budget available in this calendar year. And then, as mentioned earlier as well, there is a potential for us to sort of resurrect the geophysics investigation opportunity and improve our understanding of the basin and the location and the movement of the seawater intrusion front. Finally, the annual report review schedule. The draft annual report was released on April 30th for the BMC and public review. We're here today to review the draft annual report and receive public comments on the draft annual report. Moving forward from today, BMC staff will be working to review and comment and or address any comments received and prepare the final 2020 annual report, which will be brought back to the BMC for review and approval at the June 16th BMC meeting, and then ultimately submitted to the court on June 28th. And that concludes my presentation for item 8A, the 2020 draft annual report.
Excuse me. Okay, thank you, Daniel. So questions or comments, Bruce?
Thank you. Thanks, Dan, for presenting this. Thanks to Spencer and everybody who's done all the hard work of getting it. I've got a couple of comments, but no real questions at this point. If we want to go out to public comment, that'll be fine by me.
Does anybody have any questions before we go out to public comment? Okay, seeing none, Laura, can we go out to public comment, please?
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, please dial *9. And if you're on your computer, please raise your hand. All right, Jeff, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. This is Jeff Edwards, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the seawater wedge and its leading edge. And I know this has been discussed a lot at the Los Osos Community Services District, and they have a UAC meeting tonight. Perhaps they can give an additional discussion. But if you drew a straight line along in an east-west direction, that line will take you to the Palisades well. And while the lower confines, that is zone E, has been sealed off in that well, it's still pumping from zone D. And I know they've tried to time the pumping so it's at least impacting, but the bottom line is, and it doesn't take a hydrogeologist to look at the map and say, hey, Palisades has to be shut down, and it has to be shut down as soon as possible, perhaps even before the second program C well at Bay Oaks and South Bay Boulevard comes online. So I'd implore the district, and I know they're doing their best, and Marshall, you as a district representative, let's try to get off Palisades. I think it's absolutely critical that we do that. The other thing I'd like to mention is I hope all written comments are posted to the website on the 2020 draft annual monitoring report. I think it'd be helpful to have those up as soon as possible. Maybe they already are. And then while this is a little off topic, I heard some things about the Wild Coast Farms and their report. And contrary to Supervisor Gibson's representations, they cannot condition this project appropriately without having their water management plan thoroughly evaluated. Planning staff is not helping. So my suggestion is this: if Mr. Heimel can take the time to review the sustainability group letter, he can certainly take the time to review the water management plan for Wild Coast and prepare a response in time for next month's meeting, which this will be agendized, of course. And then in closing, perhaps a sustainability group who shoehorned their way into an appeal on this project, perhaps they can take some time to do a critical analysis of the water management plan, since that's kind of like, it seems to be what they like to do. So I'd implore both staff and the sustainability group, do a critical analysis, written critical analysis of that plan. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Lindy, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you again. I just had one question, a very good report, I guess. But the one question is, can you please explain to me how you estimate the ag use? Because you show that it's gone down. And visibly, I don't see it going down. I see more agriculture going on in the outlying areas than before. So is it a flyover? Maybe you can tell me how you came up with a reduction. Thank you.
All right, Patrick, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good afternoon. I am Patrick McGibney, chair of the Los Osos Sustainability Group. We'd like to acknowledge the significant effort that has gone into preparing this monitoring report, and thank you for the opportunity to comment. We are deeply concerned that the BMC Water Conservation Program has been underused and has not reached its full potential. According to the water use table in the draft AMR, page 38, the purveyor water use is now higher than it was when the basin plan was implemented in 2015, 1,063 acre feet a year versus 1,007 acre feet a year. And the 160 acre foot a year reduction of basin-wide water use was solely the result of community and agricultural water use estimates. It seems that neither the BMC conservation program nor the county's Title 19 retrofit program have resulted in any reduction in total water use over the past 5 years. As mentioned in the director's report, the Board of Supervisors adopted a resolution to amend Titles 22 and 23 with a new ordinance for accessory dwelling units, which would allow ADUs to be permitted in the community of Los Osos. But the letter sent to the sent by the Coastal Commission to the county entitled Implementation of New ADU Laws states specifically, new residential development must be located in areas where development will not have significant adverse effects on coastal resources, like our water basin. So it appears ADUs would fall under this law. Another important issue is that the AMR's estimated sustainable yield of 2,760 acre feet a year, which in our view is not supported by the available data and has not been formally and unanimously approved by the BMC as required by the stipulated judgment. Bob Nafisi, our attorney, will discuss this further in his comments, as will Keith Weimer in the closing comments. Lastly, regarding will serve letters, the ISJ addresses this controversy in section 5.7, stating that the BMC shall adopt regulations and restrictions on the purveyor's delivery of water within the basin to conserve water supply for the greatest public benefit, which may include, one, the obligation to deny applications for additional service connections, two, mandatory water conservation measures to reduce groundwater use, and three, enforcement of such measures. All such restrictions and regulations must be applied equally to all purveyors. Again, thank you for all you're doing. Your community is depending on this committee to manage our basin in a sustainable way. Larry Rayo will comment next. Thank you.
All right, Larry, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is Larry Rayo. I'll be discussing the agricultural groundwater production. The 2020 draft AMR proposes the ag water production be set at 650 acre feet per year. Our group recommends it be set at 800 or higher. We hired a hydrogeologist to review the calculations and basis for the development of these values, who found significant error estimations, significant estimation errors and inaccurate assumptions in the parameters used to estimate ag water use based on soil moisture content, crop rooting depth, local rainfall and evaporation, and the efficiency of the farmer's irrigation system as used in Appendix G of the report. In brief, the most significant potential errors in the method used in the draft AMR for estimating water usage for irrigated crops are as follows. An unreasonably high irrigation efficiency of 92% is used. Although an extremely efficient and properly maintained drip irrigation system might approach 92% efficiency, typically sprinkler irrigation systems tend to have low efficiencies between 50 and 70%, while drip irrigation systems have less losses, efficiencies running between 70 and 90%. The U.S. Department of Energy suggests the following coefficients be used: 50% for sprinkler type systems that are aging with poor maintenance and lack of proper scheduling, 65% for sprinkler type systems that have regular maintenance and proper scheduling, and 85% for drip irrigation systems that have regular maintenance. Nowhere do they recommend 92%. The water usage calculation assumes that every farmer uses an evapotranspiration model in their irrigation decision process. This is an extremely idealized view of farming practices. While some farmers may use an evapotranspiration model to assist their irrigation schedule, most farmers irrigate on a typical schedule, which most likely uses more water than a typical evapotranspiration model estimations. The water usage calculation does not consider other on-site farm water usage, including but not limited to plant washdown, production processing facilities, and pesticide and herbicide delivery systems. These processes can use a significant amount of water. In conclusion, it's imperative that the calculated estimates take a prudent and conservative approach to estimating water use. If we used a conservation efficiency of 50% instead of 92 that's currently being used, the agricultural production for 2020 is nearly 2,000 acre feet, as opposed to the draft calculated report of 650. By using the originally agreed upon maximum sustainable yield of 2,400 and the original calculated agricultural use of 800, then the BMC never met its 80% goal for the basin yield metric.
Well, Larry, I'm really sorry you've met your 3 minutes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Babak, you just have to unmute yourself.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, and excuse me. Thank you for the opportunity to address you, the BMC. I'm an attorney and I represent the sustainability group. And what I wanted to address today was a provision in the AMR on page 64 that talks about sustainable yield. Now, as you may know, the stipulated judgment provides that the BMC must evaluate sustainable yield annually and determine the yield with unanimous consent based on the best available science. You also heard today in the executive director's report that the BMC staff will be working on a sustainable yield estimate this summer. But the AMR proposes to retain the 2016 estimated yield of 2,760 AFI. The AMR does not explain exactly how this figure was arrived at in 2017, and it does not state that this figure was approved with the unanimous consent of the BMC, as is required by the stipulated judgment. Now, there doesn't appear to be any evidence that the BMC formally agreed to raise the basin sustainable yield to 2760 in 2016 or since then. And more importantly, there does not appear to be any compelling evidence or data to support this number above the original 2400 AFI, as was the original assumption. The AMR explains that the 2760 estimate includes or was in part based on the A Street shallow well part of program A, which as you heard again today, has not been placed in service and may not be for some time. So that doesn't seem to be a compelling basis for raising the yield. And moreover, the chloride metric has shown no clear improvement in seawater intrusion conditions and instead continues to show a deterioration. And the water level metric as well is below its target of 8 feet by some measure. And finally, the AMR explains that an update is being worked on, and that's what the executive director confirmed. So the AMR should not represent that the sustainable yield is 2760 and either go back to the 2400 or simply explain that the BMC is currently working on an appropriate estimate of the yield. Thank you.
All right, Keith, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. My name is Keith Weimer. I'm first going to point out what I believe to be an error in the water level metric in the AMR. The draft report states that the metric is 1.8 feet above mean sea level, which is the same as in 2019. This is still well below the target of 8 feet, but I think the draft annual report actually failed to consider one of the surveys which resulted in a reference point change for a metric well, and that's well LA3. When the change is factored in, the metric value drops to 0.9 feet, so under 1 foot rather than the 1.8 feet, making the metric even further from the 8 foot target. Another point we want to make is that zone E seawater intrusion is getting worse. The draft report should simply state it as that. Zone E is the deepest aquifer with the worst intrusion problem, which has advanced almost to the commercial area and possibly into the commercial area. Currently, there are not enough wells to measure it. In staff's response to our recent letter, they agreed that zone E intrusion poses a serious threat to basin sustainability, and data shows that chloride levels are rising in two zone E wells along the estuary, indicating seawater intrusion is moving inland. The report also acknowledges that the intrusion has become laterally pervasive, although earlier annual reports indicated it was likely advancing along a narrow pathway. It makes no difference whether the intrusion is spreading out laterally or moving straight into the basin. Zone E intrusion is active. It is reducing zone E capacity and threatening, possibly contaminating wells. Zone E conditions are deteriorating, and the draft annual report should say as much. Finally, going over the annual reports, we note a few things that could be changed to make the reports much easier for all stakeholders to use and more effective and a more effective management tool for the BMC. The water level data is still not completely surveyed. It should be, so you're not working with inaccurate data as you have been for 5 years. Also, all charts, graphs, and maps using water level data should use data with a zero value equal to mean sea level so that you can recognize critically low levels. Right now, the water level metric uses data with zero equal to mean sea level, but the hydrographs and contour maps use data with zero equal to about 3 feet below sea level. So when you see an area marked with zero contour line on the water contour maps, it is actually 3 feet below sea level. These are a few examples of our 48 specific revision recommendations. We ask that you carefully consider them and incorporate all of them into the 2020 draft report. Thank you.
There's no other public comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. We'll close public comment and bring it back to the committee for comments. We are going to go ahead and agendize this for review and approval at our June 16th meeting, but
Mr. Chairman, if I might, it's Bruce.
Yes, go ahead, Bruce.
I would suggest that any detailed response to some of what was raised in public comment be reserved for analysis over the next cycle and addressed in the final draft of the annual report, if that is necessary. I don't see you know, great benefit in trying to haggle these things out today. What I would like to speak to just in terms of, or what I see in the draft report, is to be sure that our staff and consultants and the committee take a careful look at how we interpret the data that's presented here. And I'll point to a couple of three examples and use that to reinforce what I think is an important next step for our effort here. You know, I heard Dan comment on the basin yield metric and a year-to-year variation and suggesting there's a deterioration. You know, the basin yield metric, assuming that safe yield doesn't change dramatically year to year or at all year to year, I think is the proper case this time, is going to be dependent on production of the purveyors over the course of the preceding year. And that production is going to vary a little bit depending on rainfall, mostly because of outside water use. And so I think when we talk about interpreting, you know, how the, for instance, the basin yield metric is proceeding, that we really step back and take a longer term view of it to the extent that that's going to inform policy changes. I think similarly with water levels, since they would be fairly sensitive to rainfall. With the chloride metric, I remember, I think it was our last meeting, you know, we're seeing the chloride metric bounce around, and we know that that's because it is heavily weighted to simply one well. And that's really, I think, at the heart of our reevaluation of it. But with whatever metric we choose to use to, you know, to evaluate seawater intrusion, which is absolutely a significant and, you know, important, necessary thing for us to track, that we look at what the expected arc of that is. And I remember last meeting that I think it was Dan superimposed the expectation for how chloride would respond as the mound at Brodersen develops and, you know, the dynamics of the basin change. So I think it would be useful to have that expectation on the presentation. The other place of interpretation is a more implicit one, and I'm looking at figure 18, which is the seawater fronts that Dan put up in the, and actually if we could get that slide back up, that might be useful to just for reference. The first thing I'd suggest is that not the metrics, but the actual, I saw it flip by the actual map view of the seawater intrusion fronts right there. So first thing I would suggest is that we should put out separate graphics for zone D and zone E, because I think that in looking at all these lines on this particular plan view, it gets a little confusing, and drawing the actual conclusions that we should from this is more complicated. I would also suggest that when we provide this information, we show exactly the data points that to contribute to the drawing of the particular contour lines that are shown there. My understanding of this is that for each zone, there are five wells, five data points, five chloride concentration levels that go into creating the contours that we see. And this is my concerns about this, maybe a little bit too harsh a word. Go back to the time in my career as a research geophysicist when I had this conversation with geologists all the time. And I know Mr. Harris has exceptional academic credentials. So I know he's a very careful scientist, but I'm not convinced that all what detail in terms of the way those arcs swing around is entirely justified by the small set of data that go into that. And in particular, if we look at the change from, you know, 2019 to 2020, that's a chloride measurement changing in one well that's changed the entire shape of that contour. So I think along with evaluating the nature of the metrics, we ought to find some way of appropriately conveying the limitations of the data. And that sounds like a technical thing, but it really has to do with what conclusions we're able to draw as we look at that. And in particular, you know, you look at the retreat, the overall retreat of that zone D front. I think it has a lot to do with establishment of one new data point and a healthy amount of interpolation, at least the interpretation. So those are my thoughts. The bottom line is, in assessing these things, especially as we look at things year to year and try to establish a trend, is that I think it raises the importance of the BMC operating with a full transient model. And I've been talking to our public works staff and indicate that the county is prepared to budget funding for the match that would secure that, get it up and running and get it in place. So at an appropriate agenda item, which is not today, I'd like to see if we could talk a little bit about that. In the meantime, maybe get our staffs together to explore that possibility.
Thank you, Bruce. Mark or Charlie, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I'll just kind of comment. Bruce's comments were really good and followed along with them and agreed with many of them. You know, just to add to them, the interpretation of the data. And then, you know, I'd like to extend that further, even tying that into our action items. And, you know, when we look at what the action items are that we listed in the annual report. Bruce followed up with his comment about the expectations of what we expect to see. I would like to see all that tied into those action items. What are the expectations from these action items? What do we anticipate seeing? And you know, I think it'll really help us prioritize, you know, what to focus in on and what to do moving forward, because there's so many things out there that all of these action items that we listed, we have a lot of work to do. We need to prioritize that appropriately. So just really wanted to make that comment to extend that a little bit further as far as the interpretation and the action items and tying it all together.
Okay, thank you. Charlie?
Yes, thanks for those nice comments from Director Gibson and Director Zimmer. I'm very interested in what Director Gibson proposed, that the county would be willing to pay for a dynamic basin model. And we should talk about that more. Thanks to the staff for all the work done on this annual report once again, and getting it out early was very nice. My first comment is I'd like to have the BMC increase its focus on the deterioration of community water sources in the lower aquifer from nitrate pollution and the associated future loss of that production capacity. And as was mentioned earlier in the meeting, that there is a privately funded basin project, BMC project, going on in that regard now, but it's not getting the focus from the BMC that it should. Another comment is I'd like the BMC to consider changing the name of the nitrate metric to a new name of the upper aquifer nitrate metric, so that there's no confusion that this is a limited scope nitrate metric. Another comment is I'd like to have the annual report provide a more detailed explanation for the adjustments made to the non-metered production estimates. That's something that appears to be missing Those details appear to be missing from the annual report. It's mentioned, you know, that I know that the details of the agreement, the adjudicated judgment agreement, provide the methods for making these estimates. But when changes are made to the estimates, there's not a detailed explanation provided in the annual report. Another comment, and this maybe even includes larger comments about the executive director report, but since the basin infrastructure project lists are included in the annual report, I'd like to see a return of mentions of the S&T Intertie project. I'd like to see that put back on the basin infrastructure project list. It's been mysteriously removed. S&T needs this intertie. We're currently working on funding strategies for how we could privately fund that project. And that's all the comments I have.
Okay, thank you, Charlie. I think I'd like to just, I think that Bruce's comments were very, very well taken, as were Mark and Charlie. And I agree with everything that was said. And I would like all the staffs to work together to respond to the comments that were made by the sustainability group and make sure that those are addressed either in changes to the report that we will see for final approval in June, at least, you know, an analysis to see whether they're appropriate or not. So I think that's the primary thing I would have to say. So I guess with that, we don't have anything else on this particular item.
Director Ohilski, if I could just add to your last comment there, just to make sure that each member of the BMC has staff participate in that review of the comments?
Yes.
Okay.
And then if any of the directors have comments, if you could communicate them to your staff to make sure that they are addressed during any discussions that they're going to have between now and the June meeting.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds great.
That makes sense to everybody?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm having problems with my computer here, of course. So unless we have anything else, I just want to confirm that our next meeting will be on June 16th at 1:30 p.m., at which time we will receive the final annual report for submission to the court as our primary item on the agenda. So. And then the other item that Charlie had asked that we'll add that item also. And then we'll just, if there's anything else comes up, Daniel, you can just go ahead and do your normal tasks.
Sounds good. Yeah, I appreciate the comments that we received from the directors, the public, the sustainability group, and look forward to digging into those comments with the BMC staff, BMC party staff, and preparing a final 2020 annual report for the BMC's review and approval.
Okay, great. All right, well, thank you, everybody. Looking forward to soon being able to meet in person, but with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn till June 16th at 1:30 p.m.
All right, thank you.